This is a special edition of the RTI Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here are your hosts, Jack Foster and Ryan Shumpert.
Hello and welcome back into the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Foster, as always, joined alongside Ryan Shumpert. Ryan, how are you doing on this Wednesday morning?
I'm doing well. My allergies are kicking my butt a little bit, but besides that, doing well.
Yeah, I can kind of hear it in your voice a little bit, but we're going to power through today, just like Tennessee powered through over the weekend and last night against Bellarmine. They have gone 4-0 since we have last podcasted, an impressive sweep in Lindsey Nelson Stadium over the defending national champion LSU Tigers, who have really had a poor start to SEC play. Only 3 wins on the year halfway through league play for the Tigers, but we're not talking about them today. We're talking about Tennessee, who is 10-5 in the SEC and 31-6 overall. Ryan, this Tennessee team continues to impress, and you know, last weekend against LSU, I think we really saw the best weekend, at least in SEC play so far, from their pitching staff collectively.
Yeah, no doubt. Actually, I mean, you said we're talking about Tennessee, and obviously we are talking about Tennessee. Permission to give an LSU observation from watching them this weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
They remind me so much of Tennessee last year. Like,
that's fair.
I mean,
yeah.
You come off a year, now obviously LSU won the national championship, but 2 fantastic teams the year before, fantastic offenses with Tennessee in 22 and LSU last season. And it just feels like this LSU offense just doesn't have a whole lot of tank in the gas. But then you look at their pitching and the numbers aren't great. They aren't bad, but you just kind of watch the guys that they keep rolling out there. And it's like, everybody seems like they should be pretty good. Like everybody seems like they have good stuff that, I don't know. It seems a lot like Tennessee last year. And if you remember, Tennessee's 5th SEC series last year was at Arkansas when they got swept and they kind of hit rock bottom. I think they were maybe 4-11 in SEC play. And now LSU is what, 3-12, I think, after this last series. So a game worse. Maybe the Tigers will turn it around. But it seems like a lot of similarities with this LSU team and last year's Tennessee team.
I agree with that. It's hard to, you know, poke any holes in that argument. I'm just, from looking at their pitching staff, I don't know if they're as deep as Tennessee was last year. And they have Holman, but how many high-end dudes do they have, like a Dolander or a Chase Burns or even what Andrew Lindsey gave Tennessee last year? So maybe they can turn it around. We'll have to see. I do think it'd be, I mean, I hope they make Hoover just because, you know, it's the defending national champions and it's LSU, huge fan base, storied program. Hope they make Hoover. Obviously makes it more interesting. But we'll see how it all shakes out. But back to what I was talking about originally. Yeah. Best weekend from the pitching staff collectively has to be.
Yeah, I definitely think it has to be. I almost think just as a whole, it has to be the best weekend Tennessee's played all year. And the offense wasn't at its best, but it still did some things well. And when you combine that with the pitching, it just felt so important. And so by far the best weekend from the pitching staff, just collectively. I don't think you really point to one person and say, oh, man, they had a bad weekend. I guess Kirby gave up that 3-run homer, so the numbers, or maybe it was a 2-run homer, so his numbers might not look great, but, you know, it felt like he was fine. And Tony Vitello kind of said it afterwards. It's, you're in there with a decent-sized lead, you're going to throw strikes, and sometimes giving up the home runs it costs to do a business. So it felt like everything went really well. Drew Beam having 2 straight really good appearances to me seems really important. I mean, we've talked about it, that him being one of the few real proven guys and really the only proven starter in this rotation, when he struggles, all of Tennessee's pitching struggles just get magnified, and he can kind of mask a lot of them when he's pitching well. So that feels huge. AJ Causey pitching better, getting back on the right track feels huge. And I say all that, and it's funny because you still kind of leave the weekend with a lot of questions for what does this mean for Tennessee's pitching staff? How do they handle things going forward?
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought you were going to follow up there, my bad. But yes, there's not a lot of questions anymore, I agree. And Drew Beam obviously leading this pitching staff, and Friday night was the night in question heading into last week. AJ Causey did not start. I think it probably surprised us a tad, and we, you know, kind of talked about how we thought Aaron Combs was going to be the opener. It was Chris Stamos, a graduate senior Cal transfer. He's a lefty, and he did well and got 6 or 7 outs, I believe. Let me check real quick. But Chris Damos did his job, and yeah, he pitched 2.2 innings, so he got eight outs for Tennessee. And I don't see why Tennessee should change what they did last Friday. It seemed like AJ Causey, kind of got back into his groove coming out of the bullpen. Pitched 4 2/3, gave up no runs, 5 hits, only 2 walks, 7 Ks. So AJ Causey was the best he's been, at least in a couple of weeks, and he really rebounded well coming out of the bullpen this time around.
Yeah, he did, and you're right. We didn't mention Stamos at all, and I think it was Friday morning when Tennessee put it out that he was going to be a starter. So when that happened, it was surprising, but you kind of started to think more about it. I think in some ways it kind of makes sense because he's an arm that Tennessee feels like they have some trust in, and he's a veteran. He's relatively stable. But it's kind of what we talked about all year. There's so many left-handed arms in the bullpen. He's probably fringe second, third left-handed arm. It feels like Kirby and maybe Binky are ahead of him. And, there's just a number of left-handed arms. Whereas it feels like right-handed, you have Nate Snead and you have Aaron Combs. And it's like after those guys, I don't know who they're going to throw, what right-handed arm that they would throw out of the bullpen. So it almost kind of made more sense to be able to use Stamos as a starter, and then you would still have Aaron Combs to use out of the bullpen and kind of have your top two right-handed arms out of the bullpen. And obviously they used Causey out of the bullpen, but he was, again, essentially a starter, throwing more innings in that game than anybody else. And it is a little bit of a different look going from a lefty to a righty. So I thought it made some sense. It obviously worked out for him. It'll be interesting to see if they keep on rolling with that. If Causey has another good outing maybe out of the bullpen, like what his confidence level's at, do they try to turn back to him as a starter? Really all of that will be interesting to see going forward. But really important for Causey to have a good outing. Stamos showed that he can be an effective opener. And I might even say Combs, to me, might have been the most encouraging sign of that pitching staff at a weekend. Not necessarily just from his lone outing. He pitched the final 2 innings on Sunday. Was really pretty dominant. Gave up no hits, no base runners at all. So it's 2 1-2-3 innings. And you talk about stacking that. He had what felt like his best outing of the year the week before at Auburn. And he was a guy that we talked about before the season that felt like was going to be one of the most important arms in Tennessee's bullpen. And he'd been a little shaky for a lot of the season. So him having 2 really good outings in a row, both of them kind of being extended outings, it seems like a really positive sign of a guy that Tennessee can maybe rely on a little bit more in their bullpen.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure Tony Vitello said something to the effect of, on Sunday press conference, was that if we are going to reach our ceiling or if we're going to be really good, you guys and everybody knows that Aaron Combs has to be really good. Like, that's how important he is to this bullpen. Yeah, you have Nate Snead. Yeah, you have AJ Causey if he's going to be in this role. But Aaron Combs is, has to be really good in those late game spots or even in extended relief, as we saw in Auburn. So, that's probably the most encouraging thing about what this pitching staff has shown in the last 2 weeks. Yeah, the Causey bounce back was nice, but Combs putting together back-to-back really good performances, I think, shows that, he's maybe found his mojo a little bit when he was struggling a lot with his command early in the season. So he's among Tennessee's top bullpen arms. There's no doubt about it, and he will be an entrusted arm for Tony Vitello and co. moving forward. And another point for this weekend, Ryan, is Tennessee has relied so heavily on Nate Snead so far this season, obviously on Sundays, but there's been at least one weekend where he's pitched on Saturday and Sunday. Point being, Nate Snead has been kind of the savior a little bit late in weekends when they've gone to these rubber matches, when the pitching staff is, or when, the pitching depth is kind of depleted entering a Sunday. You needed Nate Snead to give you 4 to 5 solid innings, and he's done so every time. This time around, that didn't really happen. He pitched on Saturday and only gave 2 innings and then did not pitch on Sunday. As I mentioned, Aaron Combs was really good out of the bullpen. So for Tennessee to do what they did pitching-wise on the weekend and for Nate Snead to only throw 2 innings, on Saturday there, granted they were important innings, but still only to throw 2 innings on the weekend, I think is a positive sign.
Oh, 100%. And that brings me into a greater point that I will almost certainly not make eloquently. And that's it. Right now, to me, the Tennessee's pitching staff, it feels like there's a lot more guys that you feel better about. The depth is much better. but there's still questions about who the top end guys are and how much they can give you. I just wonder if you go to Nate Snead as a starter at some point. And I've been the biggest guy on the Nate Snead bullpen trade train because I think he's so versatile with his ability to use in multiple games. And I think if things got tight on Sunday in the ninth inning and Combs might have struggled, I think Nate Snead would have been the guy to come in and get a couple more outs. And I think you head into any of these, most of these three-game series, feeling pretty good about the way things stand with the pitching. And you can use an opener and, you know, have Xander where maybe you need to use him as an opener too if he doesn't have a good appearance. But if you, when you get into a regional and you need more pitchers and you need a few more cemented starters, it just feels like Nate Snead is a guy that Tennessee's going to need at some point this season to start a game and to give them five or six innings. And I think that goes into Xander on the other side too. It's now 2 or 3 weeks. Xander's been really good and he's gotten really deep into the game. And I think everything you said about Snead only having to throw two innings this weekend is 100% accurate. That's a great sign. But on the other side, Nate Snead's Tennessee's second best pitcher. He needs, you know, you need to be using him more than two innings a weekend. And if it falls that way, more times than not, you know, and obviously if a starting pitcher struggles, he'd probably get more. It just feels like maybe there's room for him to get a start down the line. And again, like I said, it wasn't going to be eloquently. I'm rambling about it. It's not even necessarily something I feel a bunch of conviction about. It's just kind of something that's been in my head as we've exited this weekend.
I think what you're trying to say is like Tennessee isn't reaching their ceiling pitching wise if Nate Snead is doing this or if he isn't starting at all, because maybe what he could give them in a starting role is just lights out dominance for 6 to 7 innings.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll give credit to our buddy Chase Thomas, who had made this point. And I just completely agree with it. It feels like for Tennessee to reach that ceiling, one of Nate Snead and AJ Russell has to be a starter. And
right.
As AJ Russell rehabs and continues to work closer back, but you know, we're getting later and later in the season, it feels like, and this is pure speculation, no insider information here, it feels like the possibility of AJ Russell becoming a guy that can be a 6-7 inning starter being built up into that by the end of the year, that doesn't feel super likely. So to me, it almost feels like you kind of flip-flop those roles before the season, where maybe you move Snead into the starter spot, and then when AJ gets back, you kind of use him the way you've used Snead, as a high leverage late inning guy, or a guy that can maybe give you 3 or 4 innings, 60 pitches if something does kind of go awry for a pitcher, a starting pitcher, and you need him in the middle of innings of the game. So it feels like one of those guys needs to be a starter for Tennessee. I think you can reach your potential using kind of one potential opener a weekend. And if he pitches well, he goes more. I think it just kind of starts to make things a little bit difficult on yourselves if Drew Beam's your only guy that you enter every weekend saying, all right, we feel really good, he's going to be able to give us 5, 6, 7 innings, and everything else, every other starter, if they're an opener, yeah, that's fine. Hopefully they can give us more. It just feels like one of those guys is going to have to kind of move forward and grab the reins of one of those starting spots.
No, I think that's a good point, because probably most fans, and myself included, it feels like the hope is that AJ Russell can be back to a starter by the postseason. That's what I feel like is probably the consensus hope, is that, okay, AJ Russell will be fine for the postseason and he can start for Tennessee. If that's not possible, then I definitely agree with you, Ryan, that AJ Russell should be that guy to come out of the bullpen and to, you know, pump the high velo, and that Nate Snead can be the starter. Because, you know, right now, I know Stamos did well on Friday and Xander's done well 2 of the past 3 weeks, and I'm not taking anything away from him at all.
No doubt.
But when those guys get into that fourth inning, it kind of feels like you're playing with house money. You know, it's like, oh, we're free rolling now, because Xander's in the fourth inning and, you know, he's only allowed 1 to 2 runs or 0 runs. Like, that is free rolling at that point. And then Stamos, if he were to do that, and only threw 2 2/3 on Friday, but if he were to do that, it would be the same thing that I said about Xander. So I think you're probably right to start Nate Snead. Feels like, you know, Tennessee getting close to reaching their ceiling as a pitching staff. Where do you think he should fit in on the starting rotation? Would you move him to Friday, or would, because to me, you can't demote Xander at this point.
No. I wouldn't do that either. Because Xander feels like, you know, he just feels like a starter, whether he's an opener or not. I mean, his whole career, that's what he's been doing. He's not been a bullpen guy. He's been a midweek guy and now a Sunday guy. So, yeah, I would probably go with Snead on Friday and keep Drew Beam on Saturday. And, you know, maybe it's oversimplifying things a little bit because baseball is such a game of routines, and maybe Snead would have some struggles starting into a starting role. And you probably have to balance that out a little bit with how you use him the weekend before. Like, it might be tough to use him on a Sunday and then turn around to use him on a Friday, or heck, the way, well, I think two of Tennessee's last four series or two of Tennessee's last three series of the year are Thursday, Saturdays. So it might be hard to use him on a Sunday and turn around and want to use him to open a series on a Thursday. So some of that might be hard to make it all line up, but it just feels, it feels like they need one of those guys, and maybe AJ Russell can get back and he can be a starter, but it feels like Snead's already built up. And when you talk about not wanting to put too much on AJ Russell's plate and not want to push the envelope with him for a guy that, as Tony Vitello has said many, many times, is a very, very long baseball future, and they certainly don't want to do anything to jeopardize that. It feels like using him in the bullpen may be a little bit of an easier stepping stone for this season when he gets back.
Well, I don't think we'll see Nate on Friday this week, but what you just said about, you know, having to manage the weekend prior, if you were going to do that, it's two innings on a Saturday is not the worst idea in the world if you're going to plan to start him on a Friday the next week. So this would actually make sense for him to start on Friday at Kentucky. Don't think it's going to happen, though, but maybe anything is on the table, I think, for the pitching plans this weekend. Any more notes on this pitching staff? I know it's kind of just a select few guys we have here starting on the weekends, with Binky now back into the fold. We've mentioned Combs. Obviously, Kirby's always going to be there, but anything else you want to note for this pitching staff?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, Binky, it seems like, you know, somewhat in that Kirby role last year, maybe a little more high leverage moments come in, get a left-handed batter out. I think there's the possibility that they'll push the envelope with him a little bit more and ask him to do a little bit more at some point. But as he kind of first starts to work his way back into things after that injury, it feels like that's the way they want to use him right now.
Couldn't agree more. All right, Ryan, you said it at the top of the podcast. It wasn't the greatest weekend for Tennessee's offense. They didn't blow everybody away like they have in the previous weekends, but it was a solid weekend, specifically on Sunday, scoring 8 runs, 3-1 victory on Saturday, and a 6-3 victory on Friday. To me, my takeaway is they just did what they had to do. Sure, the pitching staff helped them out more than they have this season, but they did what they had to do, and you know, this Tennessee offense continues to roll. There's not really many big storylines here. We'll get into the what happened on the midweek in a second, but you know, as for the weekend, it was pretty lockstep.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it felt like, you know, we've talked a lot about how good the top of Tennessee's order is, but they haven't really had to carry Tennessee many times because the depth's been good too. And the middle, which I always think I emphasize is kind of being the key for Tennessee's offense to really click, those middle guys in the lineup, the Dean Curley, Bargo, Tears, Dryling, you know, those type of guys. And, you know, a lot of those guys struggled. I mean, that's definitely the worst weekend Kavarius Tears has had. Dylan Dryling hit a home run and had, you know, he was clutch again, but he wasn't on base a ton. Dean Curley didn't have a huge weekend. But the top of the lineup, those 1-2-3 were incredible. I mean, Christian Moore hits 2 home runs on Sunday, consistently on base throughout the weekend. Billy Amick, welcome back. Homer's on the first pitch he sees after returning from that appendicitis. 4-10 at the plate, adds a couple walks, and then Blake Burt continues to be the best hitter on this team, if not the best hitter in the SEC. Just was on base consistently throughout the weekend, added a homer, added a double off the top of the wall that was crazy that it wasn't a homer to win. Somehow found
I thought it hit the scoreboard.
I mean, when he hit it, it felt like there was just a no-doubt home run. And he, like you said, I think it was maybe just left of the scoreboard, but basically right at it. And he just continues to get on base with the midweek game. His hit streak's up to 27th, tied with Condridge Holloway for the best in, or for the longest hit streak in Tennessee program history. So he'll go for the record on Friday night at Kentucky. And he continues to be incredible. And those three guys who are all so, so dangerous. You saw on a weekend where Tennessee's offense as a whole wasn't at its best, those three guys were really good. And Tennessee that did enough to win 3 games. And I mean, the pitching was huge on Saturday, but even on the Friday and Sunday's game, it wasn't like the it wasn't a crazy offensive production, but it wasn't like they didn't score any innings. He scored a bunch of runs in those games, and those three guys were the dudes leading the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I should have mentioned Billy Amick is back. That wasn't the case last week when we podcasted, but he is back. And as Ryan said, first pitch he sees in 3 weeks, he sends over the left field wall. So that was a sight to see. But yeah, Dalton Bargo struggled. I think that's a storyline to take away. He got two starts in the DH spot and did not have a hit on the weekend. Rhys Chapman got the other DH start, and that's where I will turn this conversation toward is Rhys Chapman right now, Ryan, because Tuesday night in the midweek, Rhys Chapman raked, going 2-for-3 at the plate, 2 home runs, 3 RBIs, got a walk. Rhys Chapman, you know, we've talked about him a lot on this podcast, but he just continues to make the most of his opportunities more times than not. And, you know, I think he's been starting on the SEC and on SEC weekend, so it feels weird to say it, but I do think he is firmly in the fold here for Tennessee, and maybe some people don't realize that.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot this time of the year to do something in a midweek game that really stands out to me. But, I mean, what he did last night with those hitting numbers and then the just incredible leaping Superman catch he made in right field in the first inning was about as impressive as a midweek performance as you're going to find. So he continues to show why he's in the mix. And like you said, he started 6 SEC games, so over a third of them at this point. He's played in 10 of them. And it just feels like, you know, we've talked so much this year about who's going to lock down that last outfield spot, or who's gonna be the DH, or when Amick was out, you know, how did they shuffle everything with Bargo maybe at third, or Antigua at shortstop and Curley at third? It just feels like that's going to be in flux, and they're going to ride the hot hand. I mean, all these dudes feel like, to some degree, they've earned some trust, and, you know, maybe Robin Villeneuve is struggling more than others at this point, but I wouldn't write him off to be a guy that figures some things out and has a stretch or has a weekend the rest of the way where he's really good. So it feels like Tennessee's going to continue to ride the hot hand there. You're going to see a bunch of different guys kind of start at the DH spot right now. And again, I think I made the point last week, I think you'll see Tony have a quick trigger on some guys. I mean, he's been aggressive with some stuff within games where if a Chapman or a Bargo or a Villeneuve, I don't think we've seen it as much with Inslee, which makes sense because of how good he is defensively, but maybe even an Inslee, you know, has some bad at-bats, first couple of bats, you know, aren't productive at-bats, strikeouts, or, you know, just not getting the job done. He's not going to be afraid to pitch in. He goes even deeper into spin. I mean, Bracky Lowry got, what, 2 hits or 2 plate appearances,
right,
I believe, last week against LSU. Ethan Payne comes in for a sack bunt. Like, Tony Vitello clearly has a lot of confidence in his bench. It feels like he has some confidence, you know, confidence level in Colby Backus too, who continues to about every opportunity he gets to do something well. So it just feels like while we talk in the media and the fans talk about who's it going to be, who do you pencil in this final spot, it just feels like Vitello has some trust in a lot of guys, and he's going to give a lot of guys opportunities, you know, down the stretch of the season.
Yeah, you know, Colby Backus is hitting .500 on the year. He's got 3
That's
home
crazy.
Runs. Dude's raking. He's terrorizing on Tuesdays.
He's terrorizing
those midweek opponents. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head on all that about the quick trigger and, you know, Robin probably being on down the pecking order. But, you know, Brad Key Lowry's getting those 2 pinch hit spots is because he approaches things the correct way. And Tony Vitello talked about how, you know, infectious his attitude is in the cages in the best way, and just how he goes about his business is really admirable. So that's important to Tony Vitello and this coaching staff. That's what Ethan Payne's been doing for years, and that's why Ethan Payne was playing first base in Tennessee's biggest game of the year at the point last year in Clemson Regional.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's the best bunter on the team. So there's a lot of guys who make – go ahead.
The biggest stretch in Tennessee baseball history.
That double play. That's
true. That would have lost the game against Clemson.
That's right. I saw someone post that on Twitter the other day, and it kind of took me back. And I was like, oh, dude, that was like one of the best games you'll ever cover right there. Tennessee-Clemson baseball.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
But yeah, there's just ways these guys can make impact on the team that maybe you don't see on TV or even at the game. So the roster is deep. The people who can make an impact, the amount of people who can make an impact, it's certainly deep on this roster. Ryan, let's look at Kentucky real quick. They've obviously done really well so far this season. They're leading the SEC East. They're 14-1 in SEC play. They own sweeps over Ole Miss and Georgia. you know, they've just done really well. But there is one stat that, and they also have swept Alabama, should have mentioned that, and Auburn. But of course, Auburn has been struggling as of late. But there is one stat: Kentucky hasn't beaten an SEC team that has a winning record in league play. Now, pretty much everyone is around 500 unless you're Arkansas, A&M, Tennessee, or Kentucky. So it's a little bit of a asterisk on that stat. But, you know, it's not like Kentucky has swept some of the top teams in the SEC. They have good sweeps under their belt. But what is your thoughts, or what are your thoughts on this Kentucky team and what they've been able to do so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like every week it's like, wow, it's, you know, Kentucky has a good weekend, and it's like, is Kentucky legit? Is Kentucky legit? I don't know how good they are, but my goodness, I mean, if you're 14-1 in SEC play, I don't care who you played, you're pretty darn good, and it's been really impressive what they've done. And you know, we'll figure out more. The back half of their schedule, as you'd expect, is harder. I think they go Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, and then Vanderbilt in Florida to close it out. So they have a bunch of challenging series left, but you know, it's a really good team, and this is going to be a team that's a very, very tough series. I think the toughest series for Tennessee to date when you talk about how good they are and talk about that it's on the road. And I think it's going to be, as Tennessee plays a lot better and they enter this weekend on a 7-game winning streak, going back to that series opening loss at Auburn, which felt like, you know, about as bad as a game or as discouraging as a performance as they've had for a lot of the season, or one of them, I guess, probably not the most discouraging. It's kind of a good litmus test to see just how good Tennessee is at this point.
Smaller sample size for sure, but I think a storyline with last year's team was that they struggled on the road. You know, away from Lindsey Nelson Stadium, they just simply weren't as good. But this year, I don't get that feeling. You know, I know they lost a game, two games in Alabama, and one game in Auburn, and one game in Arlington, but it does feel like there's not much difference from how they play at home and on the road. Do you kind of get that vibe so far?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, it feels like it's gone back to what most of Tony's teams are. I mean, really, last year was the first one that ever had any sort of struggles on the road, if not were better on the road. You know, like in 21, I think they won every single road series, and some of that was schedule and how all that fell. And certainly 22 was incredible everywhere they played besides Lexington, Kentucky. Yeah, to me, it's not a huge concern from a playing on the road hostile environment. You know, I don't think that stuff is going to worry this team too much. I think a lot of it's just offense is so good that, and you've heard the players talk about it. It's like, yeah, your offense is this good. You can be down 3 or 4 runs and it's like, you're still in the game. You just need one big inning, which can come at any time. And I think that helps keep confidence up.
Right. So what should be the expectation heading into this weekend for Tennessee? Kentucky third in the nation, Tennessee's fourth in the nation in terms of D1 baseball rankings. What should be the expectation for the Vols heading into what is their biggest series to date?
You know, expectation, I'm not totally sure. I think the goal is certainly 2 out of 3. You know, I'd probably pick Tennessee to win one at this point in time. But the goal should be to certainly win two. I don't know if the expectation should be to win two, but the expectation should be to be extremely competitive and to have a good chance to win two is what I would say.
So you're picking Kentucky to win the series?
Yeah, sitting here on Wednesday morning, that will probably be my pick. And, you know, one thing I'll just say, kind of looking at Kentucky a little bit, and obviously this isn't groundbreaking, but two incredibly different styles of play in what Tennessee and Kentucky do. I mean, Tennessee is a home run hitting team. They are now at 100 of them, I believe, on the season. There's a 101. They get to 101 last night. They got to 101 last night.
Yeah, 101. Shout out Chuck Taylor for hitting the 100th homer of the season, by the way.
Yeah, that was awesome. So Tennessee's at 101 home runs. Kentucky is at 51. So they're right in the half. And Kentucky, very much a small ball team. Kentucky and runs the bases really well, really aggressive. 79 stolen bases on the season for Kentucky. Tennessee has all of 24 stolen bases. Tennessee has attempted to steal 34 bases this season. Kentucky has attempted to steal 99. So you're talking about a team that they do things very, very differently. And I think that's where I think home field advantage could come in, because Kentucky's park is much more of a pitcher-friendly park, and you start to look at the weather this weekend. Not supposed to be very nice in Lexington. Rain.
Shocker.
Rain possible on, I believe, Friday and Sunday, And, you know, it's pretty, supposed to be pretty warm on Friday. And I think the high is like 68 on Saturday, and it's an afternoon game, so it won't be cold by any means, but not super warm. And in Sunday's game, I think the high is like 55 that day. So it's going to be nasty, nasty weather on Sunday. So I do think for two teams that play such contrasting ways, the weather in the home ballpark definitely is going to give Kentucky an advantage.
Well, there you have it. Three-game series this weekend for Tennessee. Going to be a big one for both teams as they are 1-2 in the SEC East, Kentucky and Tennessee, respectively, for the game times this weekend. All three games, by the way, on SEC Network Plus, but Friday night's game at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, Saturday at 2 p.m., and Sunday at 1 p.m. If you can't watch the game, no problem at all. You can follow along with the live update thread on RockyTopInsider.com for every single Tennessee baseball game, or you can follow the tweets at RockyTopInsider on Twitter. Still refuse to call it X, but podcast I listen to, shout out Fantasy Football Today. One of the analysts on the show came up with Twix, Twitter and X combined. I may start using that. I may have to steal that because that is a really cool nickname. So Twix, you can follow along at Rocky Top Insider. Also on Twix, he's at rshump00. That's S-C-H-U-M-P. And I'm at Jack Foster Media. We'll have coverage for you guys all weekend long. Ryan, last words?
Yeah, one quick final thought on the weekend. I mean, Tennessee's defense has been a lot better this season, really, than definitely last year and probably even the year before that. This weekend will be a big test for that with a team that obviously, like I said, steals lots of bases, puts the ball in play a ton. So I think that'll be a key for the series. And again, another good litmus test to see Tennessee's defense has been better. It feels like it has the potential to be elite when it's at its best. Can it be that way this weekend against a team that's really going to test it?
Considering the stolen base numbers, I feel like it's probably should expect Cal Stark to start all three games.
Yeah, I had the same thought as well. You would think.
And Cannon Peebles just cannot buy a hit right now. So we'll see. We'll see. But set the game times, obviously, at Rocky Top Insider for all your Tennessee baseball coverage needs. That's Ryan. I'm Jack. We'll see you guys next time.